motivate us, maybe they could be tools rather than just blockades. But the true special thing is, there is a resource in the town I live in, Philmont. They have a store called the Philmont Free Store, and it is like the most beautiful establishment that I've ever been in because it truly is a free store. They subsist off of donations, and I learned about it because Phoebes told me about it, because I had no idea something like that would even exist. This is a place that they give people winter coats. It literally is responsible for some people actually being able to make it through the winter, Lawrence. I mean, don't you? You've been there before. You told me you know the owner.
Yeah, we went and did an Narcan training over there at the beginning of the summer, and I believe we have another one coming up soon, right, Phoebes?
I think that's right. Yeah.
I know I saw the email going on. I don't know the exact date, but we can talk about that later or post it on social media.
I know I'm not part of that part of the team, but I'm part of the HHR team. I mean, I plan on...
But it's all community. We're all together.
I
so
know.
All
I was just...
You could be there.
I was just trying to make you guys laugh, and it didn't work.
Anyway. Now it's working. Well, no, I'm glad you shouted out the free store.
I have a lot of plans
because,
for
these places aren't just a store. They're also community gathering spaces, right? Like Lauren said, like we got to go and do a community Narcan training there. I actually helped start a free store up in Hunter. And
yes, I've been to that one, and they speak very highly of you.
Oh, appreciate that. No, it's amazing. I mean, here's the thing.
We live
in a disturbingly high consumption capitalist society, which means there is a surplus of stuff all over the place that's either going to end up in the trash eventually, in the ocean, right? And so like that free store was motivated both because of the social issues of how everything is overpriced, really, and the environmental issue of there's so much waste out there, you know? But it's really hard because it is donation based, and
yes.
And you know what I think is the key actually to keeping these things running, is that when somebody who has the means decides they want to clean out their closet and give away a bunch of really nice clothes, donate some money at the same time, pay the free store who's taking stuff off your hands, giving you a place to feel good about where your stuff's being donated, maybe washing it, definitely sorting it, definitely organizing it, right? There's a ton of labor that actually goes on the donation end of things, right? And if you're in the position of being able to donate, maybe think about also throwing $5 of cash down when you do that. And I think that gets lost on people because they feel like they're already giving something, which is awesome. But I know a lot of people who love the free store because it's a place they can do their spring cleaning drop-off every year, but they're not doing anything to make sure that the rent can get paid or that, you know, it can keep running. So just a shout out to those people who are donating to think
about
that.
Thank you. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Thank you so much. But that's not real. That does help. Yeah, Phoebes, you're right. But they are really going through a very rough patch right now. And I, as an artist, naturally have no money. So I can't really help them. But what I can do is use my superpower. And my superpower is that I have a really loud voice that people happen to listen to because I say some things that make a lot of sense sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
And we talk about things that are really happening right now. And what we need to do is try to save the free store, the film offer. We have to, because people need that. And then we need to, once we save it, create more. And what you and Lawrence were saying, doing Narcan trainings there, I hadn't even thought about that being a thing that could be done there. But that is just the beginning. I'll go read my poetry there. I'd sit out front.
Be a fundraiser.
I will do anything to try to get this store to keep going because, to me, it's important that it exists in the world because it shows me that things aren't as bad as they used to be because now we've got something so beautiful.
I'll never forget when we started our free story. Actually, was just a pop up once a month that we did at the Pretzel Art Center before we had our own space, and so we'd literally bring bins of clothes, set them all up for the day, let people come through, and then pack it all up at the end of the day. And I'll never forget one of the first people who ever came to our free store was a single mother. She had a van with four kids in the back. She was driving through Prattsville, saw our sign. stopped, came in, and she's like, is this real?
That's what
and
I'm
we were
saying.
Like, yes, it is. And she was like, this is life-changing. I later, like, I'm between homes. She was, every single one of her kids could pick out all the toys they wanted themselves, no limits, right? Except
thing.
For how much room was in their van. She got clothes for all of them, winter coats. Yeah, and it's just that can make the difference, you know, between somebody making their rent payment or not that month. And for those kids to feel like, and what I love about free stores also is that there's not, it doesn't have to be a stigmatizing place, because you could be really rich and also walk into a free store and be like, this is awesome, and like find some cool stuff. It's for everybody.
Yeah, no, I went there right before the show today and I did not feel any judgment whatsoever.
Yeah, no, it kind of normalizes the idea in a way that this is for all of us to benefit.
But when you first
charity.
When you first told me about it, Phoebes, I thought you were joking. I was like, what is a free store? We did an episode, one of our first episodes on resources. And you said the Philmont Free Store. I said, I live in Philmont, Phoebes. Please elaborate. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense that some place like this can exist and continue to exist. But the fact that it's there right now is beautiful. And mm-hmm. we need to preserve that if we can. I'm going to try. And I hope,
believe in you.
I hope other people catch on and they want to help too.
Yeah, and me personally, like, I like to support businesses that are friendly and supportive of people in recovery or people trying to get in recovery. So there's a lot of coffee shops and restaurants that I know that people that are in recovery that own. And, you know, when I'm hungry or I'm trying to bring somebody from out of town, I'll bring them to those places.
Yeah, you know what? Speaking of that, something that is specifically to help people in recovery... My landlord, his name's Nate Wright. He owns a bunch of property in like Philmont and stuff. The apartment that he rents to me, he specifically only rents it to people who are in recovery and can't afford it, like homeless people. He told me, I was coming out of the program that I went to and I was just saying it was great.
Oh.
I was just coming out of the program that I went to in August and... You remember what I'm talking about, right, guys? Mm-hmm. And I called Nate, and I was like, listen, man, if I can't get to this apartment of yours, then I will be living in a hotel, and hotels are death to recovery. And he was like, okay, well, don't even worry about the money. Me and my wife decided we're going to give you a shot. And they gave me my first home since I had been 19 years old. I've been homeless or in prison since I was 19 years old. And because they succeeded with overcoming recovery, they decided they're going to give people a shot. And you know what? They lost a lot of money doing it, but they kept doing it. That's beautiful. I just wish the world had more people like that, man. I don't know, man. We could
make... I think there's a lot of people who actually have that ethic, but maybe just don't know how to make it happen. And I think it does require a community to rally around, because a lot of people who are cynical will be like, well, of course the free mart's struggling. Like that's how business works. Like, you know, and it's like, it doesn't have to be that way. It can absolutely sustain itself if people rally around it and value it. Right. I think that's the piece, is knowing as a society how to value things and put energy toward them. And I think it's super cool what you're saying about, you know, being an ethical renter. You know, if you're have the privilege of owning homes and space for people to have a home, and you have power to make decisions about how you want to treat that power, you know,
just the fact that he told me, Phil, I am losing money on this apartment. And it's starting to take a toll, but like the whole idea behind what I wanted to start is what keeps me giving it to people. It's like, oh, we'll stop doing the transition home after this guy finally finds a new place. But before this guy finds a new place, another guy who needs help comes along.
Right.
And they're just such great people, and they want to help so much that they keep doing it. And it's beautiful. And I don't know if he listens to my show, but he's a huge influence in my life, and I have so much respect for this man. So, Nate Wright, if you're listening, and Rachel too, of course, I want to let you guys know that you are wonderful people, and you'll never know how thankful I am for what you did. But Right now, we're going to take a quick song break because my sister won't stop calling my cell phone. And maybe we'll just bring her back on air when I come back just to have some revenge. All right, guys. This is Recover Together. And if you're struggling right now, make sure you reach out, okay? Because we're here for you. All right. We'll be right back. This is Phoebs' pick. As it is, the stigma. Boys don't cry.
Let us take a sightseeing tour.
The French Dispatch is a rocket ship ride to your cinematic soul.
Physically or metaphorically?
Both.
It's Wes Anderson's most innovative and beautiful movie yet.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
Yes.
The French Dispatch, rated R.
At the heart of every Buick SUV is you. Pay no interest for 72 months. Plus, current eligible Buick owners get $250 purchase allowance on 2021 Buick SUV models.
I just wanted to let our listeners know that I did not notice an ad was playing, and I'm sorry for that. I'm going to get back to the song, and I just wanted to point out the fact that the ad that played is not necessarily our view, and I'm sorry. What's up, everybody? We are coming back. I don't have my headphones on, but I'm ready to tell you a little bit about... Holy cow! I don't know why that happened, but it'll never happen again. I learned from my mistakes.
Better not.
Yes, sir. So I took that break to return my sister's phone call, and she didn't answer. And then she texted me and told me to call her. I'm confused, but now she'll wait. So what I really wanted to talk about was there are certain emotions that... You good?
Yeah.
There's certain emotions that while we're recovering are freaking crazy. You know what I mean, Lawrence? You went through.
Like, absolutely.
Being guilty for... Feeling guilty for... Going to Twin Counties and having to have the doctor call in another script because the first one went to the wrong pharmacy is asinine. We should be able to see, okay, we need this medicine, and whatever we have to do to make sure we get it when we need it is okay. We don't need to be ashamed of it, even if they're clearly sounding like we're burdening them. This is their job. Our job is to get better. And the only way we can do that is if we accept these emotions and then use them to benefit ourselves. Like with guilt, I feel incredibly guilty that I am not in the position to be a regular father figure in my daughter's life. However, instead of what I used to do before I went to prison, which was allow that guilt to crumble me and then use that to fuel my addiction, I've decided to turn it around a little bit, and now I let the guilt fuel me to try to do better. And it's hard. And sometimes it's just really hard emotionally to think about how she deserves so much better, but I just can't give it to her. And I find solace in the fact that I do know I'm trying, and I really am. And I know that I'm doing a lot better before I went to jail. I'm not perfect. I relapse. I do things because sometimes my head is just in a spot where I don't understand why I feel the way I feel or why it's causing me to act the way that I act. So I do things to try to help myself understand them, and it usually works. And I have so far, since I've been home from prison in March, been pretty regularly successful in maintaining a non-addicted lifestyle. That should not be confused with the phrase, I have maintained abstinence. I haven't. I've used several times, as a matter of fact. A lot of times I've been smoking weed, and I don't think that that counts as a relapse anymore, but I have relapsed. I went to the Recovery Resource Center of Orange County because I was talked into trying meth and then did it for 8 days straight. But on the eighth day, I put myself into a program because I didn't want to go back down that road. And that, for anybody that's listening, that's recovery. I put myself in there because I wanted to do better. Before I went to prison, I would have never done that. Ever. The only time I went to rehab before I went to prison was because I ran out of money. And that was just to stay in detox so I could get some methadone and not be sick until I knew I was going to have money in a couple days. To recover is a process. And that's what's big with HHR. And that's what I love to reiterate. And I repeat it a lot because I need people to recognize what this movement is. We are going to redefine recovery with the proper definition. And we're going to show society as a whole that us committing to recover, even if we mess up, proves how strong we are. Because that is a hard thing to do. Okay, so I don't know really. Do you have any example to try to compare that to? Because for me, it's really hard to compare it to anything. Do you have any good?
Well, I was just thinking about, like, the new definition of recovery is really, like, depending on where you're at. So
it's just to recovery includes yesterday.
It includes abstinence and it includes harm reduction. Like,
abstinence is the goal. But because you're not
absent. It doesn't have to be the goal, though.
I know. I mean, it could. Yeah, you're right. It doesn't have to be.
The goal is to really improve your life. And, you know, the easy way to do it is to completely stop using drugs. But
just because you
life still happens, and it's still going to be tough to deal with. You know?
We need more professionals like you guys. Because people will say, if you're not completely abstinent, you're not in recovery. And then people get discouraged, and they just stop. That is so far from the truth. Before I went to prison, I was shooting 10, 15 bags a day. And I was stealing to get that money. And I was taking the money that my daughter's mother was saving in my daughter's piggy bank. Because I didn't care. Because I needed to get high. That's all I was thinking about at that time. Now, specifically because of the 4 years I sat in prison, I sat and I thought, I will never allow myself to sink so low in drug use to where I'm going to put someone else at a detriment to satisfy something I don't even really need. Really, it's something I don't even really want anymore. Sometimes it rears its ugly head and I fall victim. And I will say that proudly because it just shows how real my recovery is, how much strength I put into it. Because I haven't gotten to the point where I'm back to a regular addiction, an active addiction. I've gotten refused for the last 4 weeks for every inpatient rehab I tried to go to because I don't meet the criteria. And the criteria, at least to them, I guess, is consistent failed drug tests and dirty urines. So I'm not allowed to get treatment because of that. Lawrence, what do you have to say about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy. Like, you know, they should be listening to the client about what they need rather than trying to fulfill some sort of medical diagnosis in order. Like, I understand, like, in order to get paid, like, they need a diagnosis, but, you know, they're not really taking into consideration what the client needs.
It's like the same issue we see in physical healthcare, that we have a system that makes a lot more money on treating like the acute symptoms instead of doing anything preventative or maintenance, right? And so you're trying to preemptively put yourself into a space because you know you want to maintain your recovery. And they're like, nah, you got to be really sick to come back here. Like, stay out there, struggle bad enough until you have to come back because you've really fallen apart. Yeah, and that's a shame. There's really not that in between. Well, I mean, I think Clubhouse is like an example of where we're trying to create that sort of in between space. But sometimes you need more than that because Clubhouse can't replace the fact that maybe where you're living isn't working for you and is causing a bunch of triggers and stress. We can't replace the fact that, you know, there's all these world stressors. And maybe that's the piece, you know, I'm curious, like, why inpatient is the draw for you, right? Is it because you need a break from the sort of like external pressures of just trying to navigate the world around you for a minute? Or what is it that you actually need? And can we recreate that in any other setting besides just inpatient?
Are you asking for me personally? Or
Yeah.
Well, for me personally, no, I am doing better now. I was trying very hard to get into inpatient because to get to the psychiatrist in the mental health clinic in my town, it's absolutely impossible. And the only way they'll let you in to see the psychiatrist immediately is if you're coming home from an inpatient program. So I wasn't remanded to an inpatient. I was actually told by several of my clinicians and professionals that it's probably not even beneficial for me right now. But it was the only way I was going to get a regular psychiatrist. I found a way around that because I was forced to with a doctor that is not happy that she has to be my holdover. But I mean,
well, the problem is right now, this one, number one, the system is bogged down. So Phil has been trying to seek mental health treatment. And meanwhile, there's a blockade at the mental health facility. I called there the other day. They said they have 80 people on the waiting list, and they are not accepting new people. And Phil is one of those 80 people. You know, and he's really engaged in what now I would consider not is coercive. It's not person-centered. It's not like, hey, Phil, do you need to get away for a while and have a safe place to gather your thoughts and you know, us make referrals for you to be connected when you get back? No, it's just my, you know, one or several people decided my opinion of you is that you need this, and I'm going to actively work towards this. You know, with or without your consent.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've been like talking about this a lot to anybody that'll listen. I'm not playing around with these people anymore. Like, I'm gonna hold people accountable. And that's what I've been doing.
That's what should always be done. People need to be held accountable. People need to be able to admit responsibility. Yeah, I used, because I needed to feel better. And I didn't know how else to do that. And then I felt like for using, but I did accomplish my goal. So, I mean, that right there is accountability, right? That's telling people, yes, I did what I did. I had a reason for it. You can call it an excuse and say that it was wrong. But I didn't have very many options at the time.
I mean, the reality is addiction, the actual use of a substance in a person's life. Oh, my dog's growling.
That was great. He sounded very angry.
He's good. But like, it's almost like only seeing the tip of the iceberg above the water, right? Like, there's a whole mountain of deep personal life experience that substance use is attached to, but that's invisible to most people, which I think is why they kind of, you know, people who haven't experienced it can be kind of flippant, like, just stop using, right? As if the use isn't deeply woven into the psychology of the rest of things that have happened in your life, grief that
and something else,
or 20 years old. Yeah, go ahead.
That phrase and something else, I want to let you know, they make me so angry. The second phrase was, a girlfriend of mine told me. It was when I was battling my very severe depression. This was before COVID, before prison. She was like, you just need to try to feel happier. I was like, what?
Uh-huh.
That's all I got to do?
Uh-huh.
Just snap out of it.
So the cure to depression is to just try to feel happier. I don't know why I didn't think of that. Wow, I feel better already. That's what people need to realize. People confuse clinical depression with a depressed state. And then they go even further and say that mental health is not real. What? I have literally laid in my bed for 3 days eating Hershey Kisses and getting up only to go to the bathroom. Because I was so sad that I didn't want to. I didn't just not want to. I couldn't do anything else. You think that that's pretend? Even your dog agrees.
And he absolutely agrees.
Lip. He was born to be an emotional support animal, Phoebes.
He's a registered emotional support animal.
He's a great one. He just emotionally supported me from like 500 miles away. But it's like those things, just stop using. Just feel better. You know what? I'm going to do that.
It's a cop-out. Yeah. It's what people say when they don't have an answer and they feel inadequate and they just want to blow you off, you know?
That's absolutely true. And, like, then there's another thing that people in the older version of recovery were very adamant with. If you have ever been addicted to any drug in the world, you can never, ever use another drug again, because then you're going to become addicted to that one automatically.
Nope.
Drugs were created as tools. I just had this conversation with Lawrence. But they're tools, and they were originally intended to do certain things. And if you use them to do those certain things, only those certain things, and only at the time you need it to do that, you're not an addict. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with taking a painkiller prescribed by a doctor the way it's prescribed if you are in pain. And just because you were addicted to heroin, I don't think people should judge you if you do have to do that. I don't think people should judge you at all. Whose business mm-hmm. is it? Isn't the goal to just, like, get through this life with as little suffering as possible and just maybe be able to, like, appreciate the beauty of everything around us?
You know, that we just said really, you know, I was spending a lot of time thinking about the role of grief in addiction, prepping for the show today. And what you just said really is, it's interesting. It's like, you know, shouldn't the goal be to just minimize the amount of suffering? And like, yes, but there's a difference between numbing suffering and moving through suffering,
oh,
right?
Yeah,
there's a difference between trying to make painful feelings disappear. And again, we live in a culture that likes quick and easy, quick and easy fixes, and does not like to dedicate a lot of time to the hard work of what it actually takes to be healthy and well, whether that's from the work of, you know, making sure there's healthy food in every community so that we have good preventative health instead of just fast food, right? Down to, you know, what we're talking about now with addiction and quick fixes. And I, you know, it's easy. So for example, like a specific example of this speed issue, right? It's like somebody has chronic, you know, has an injury at work. If you put them on painkillers, they can go back to work, right? Like capitalism is all thumbs up, right? Mask the problem, people carry on, but it doesn't work. Versus being like, take 3 months of paid leave off, get better, and come back, and it's sustainable differently. And I just think we live in a society that has a giant, massive collective pile of unprocessed grief and anger. And until that gets given its due space,
hold on, you'll be all right.
You know, to be really, really worked through, we're gonna keep being in this pattern of folks having to numb it out, because what else can you do? You either got to move through it or you got to numb it. Staying in it kills people, right? And that's the other piece about shame about substance use. You know, like for a lot of folks, the substance use is what's keeping them from killing themselves in that moment, right? So we need to
be very, very
careful about, you know, shaming any response to these things. And again, see the iceberg under the water. We need to work harder to see the depths, the true depths.
Phoebe,
of
how many
underlying
people...
action.
That was beautiful, by the way, the whole see the iceberg thing, because that's really what it is. People only see the tip. And like, that's just like,
that's all they want to see.
That's the least damaging part.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that's underneath is what is really, really eating me away slowly. But, I forgot what I was going to say, because that really was inspiring.
I'm sure it'll come back. It always does. It comes around.
Yeah, I mean. But anyway, like, the shame. What do you think, in your opinion, is, like, how much of the shame that people let it get that far and they don't want people to know? That's stopping them from recovering, because I bet you that's a huge number. They're like, I can't believe I took these pain pills and I was taking them the right way, but the pain kept coming back. And now look at me, I'm sick. I can't let my wife know. It is just, we need to make it acceptable that people can ask for help. Nobody should feel ashamed of wanting to get better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, there's so much shame around admitting sickness in this culture, whether it's physical, mental, addiction related. There's so much shame, and I think it can be particularly hard in gendered, especially men getting the message that they should not share, you know, those sorts of quote.
You
weaknesses.
Can't cry. If you're sad,
that's why I picked that song, right?
Cry.
So, like, Boys Don't Cry was sort of tongue in cheek, the song, right? Because the whole song is about what a toxic concept that is.
I'm proud that I was as addicted as I was and I got to where I am today.
I think it's because you let yourself feel your true emotions and you're honest with yourself. And I think that's why you got to where you are today, is you pushed past the shame to be truly honest with yourself. And now you're at the point where you can bring that to other people too. And that, to me, is the first step.
I'm proud of that. And that's what we got to get other people to see. Instead of seeing the shame of what society is telling you is so wrong, why can't you be proud of how committed you are to dealing, living with that shame and getting better? That is strength. That is something people should congratulate you for, not say bad things about. Like, it sucks when you stop doing dope, guys. Just, if anybody in the world that's listening didn't know, when you get sick from opioid withdrawal, it is very uncomfortable. And that alone is a good enough reason for me to go and do another hit, because it's a terrible feeling. So if you're able to, even if with maintenance, like even with a detox thing, if you're able to go through that and then say, you know what, I'm going to keep going and I'm going to keep trying, that's incredible. That's beautiful. And people should be like bowing down to you and asking you how you are so strong and what they can do to be like you. Because we've gotten into this like this like delusion that people who become addicted are less than other people because those other people never became addicted. It's something like 95% of American adults use some sort of illicit drug at some point throughout every year, and a lot of them do it on a weekly or a weekendly basis. This isn't just like an opinion, it's a fact. But they're better because they don't get addicted. No, what they're better at is not having terrible things happen to them to where they just want to feel something that is not sorrow. That's what they're better at. But they're not stronger than us. Nobody's better than anybody. But if people started acknowledging the strength of those who are recovering, maybe more people would stick with it.
Absolutely. Strength-based is like a core principle of any sort of work with people, right? It's like you got to start by seeing the intrinsic strength that comes from their predicament. And that's why we, you know, support a peer-based model at the clubhouse, right? It's like people who have experienced addiction have a million different strengths and insights and wisdoms to draw on to support other people in that experience. So much more than any letter behind your name could possibly create.
Absolutely.
And we have to value
that. I love
that
you just said that.
It's so true. Much I more. See it every day.
I don't care if you've got a PhD, ABCFZ.
Exactly.
You cannot counsel me on drug addiction or how to beat it.
You know, or you but you're going to be limited if you can't really connect with what's happening.
I've had counselors that never, like, had any experience with drugs. And I was like, I'm insulted that I'm even sitting in your office. How could you help me?
That's like always that way. When I was in outpatient a bunch of times.
That's like learning how to cook from a painter.
They always knew the counselor who went to school and knew addiction out of a book. And everybody just discredited them. They're like, I don't really care what they have to say. They don't know what I'm going through.
No, I'm going to tell them everything and watch them not know what to tell me. I'm just going to be like, listen, this is what I'm going through right now. And since you're a counselor and you graduated college, I'm going to take your advice. What should I do when I'm sitting in my room for 3 days in the dark and I can't stop crying and I just want to do better? And all I could think about is all these things that I messed up, but how badly I want to do better. Mm-hmm. And people don't believe me, though. They think I'm lying. So, I mean, why not just do? If you have no experience in any sort of drug use or those feelings, what advice are you going to give me? What should I do, Doc? I don't know. You should probably go to the emergency room. Sounds pretty bad. We're going to come back. We're getting... Today is a very good show. We're all very passionate about it. I want to let you guys know as always, I love our team. But we got to get another song break in. We got to come back. Lawrence never did his list. So we're going to do that. Phoebe's never painted the picture. And that has got to happen because he drops jewels. All right, guys. We'll be back. This is Recover Together. Thanks for listening so far. And if anybody needs help, my phone number is 518-610-0477. You can also call and be a part of our new segment, Community Calls. However, nobody's answering me today. So any calls in, we'll start advertising it better. All right, guys. We'll see you soon. Well, song wasn't at the beginning, guys. Now we'll see you soon.
Calling all cause we got another victim. Cause my love has become an affliction. What did you expect from me? What did you expect from me?
I'll sing a whole song if we get more listeners, guys. Tell your friends. What's up, everybody? I just wanted to let everyone know we're about to start the Recover Together rock band. And Phoebes over there. what are you going to play, Phoebes?
I would love to play drums. That's what I would really want to play.
Are you good at
that? That or bass. I'm not good at either. I can play the cowbell to start.
That's okay. Everybody gets a job.
I did play the alto saxophone in high school. That'd be cool.
That is incredible. I have wanted to, mix in a, rock alto sax with a modern-day type pop punk.
Be cool, right?
It would be so cool. Why hasn't anybody done it? Because they're not as much of a genius as I am, obviously. No, but Lawrence was just telling me during the break, he had to have surgery to remove nodules off of his vocal cords, so now he can only sing in one octave. Why is my sister calling my phone again? I don't know. But anyway, what that made me think of was that if we could help him, I'm just using him as an example, take that one octave and master it to the point where he can sing in that one octave better than anybody else could. He just can't go any higher. But then he's effectively turning his disability into something unique and, like, marketable. Like, that is what we... You can do that with anything.
Yeah, we should utilize that for all of our problems, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's real. It's there's a principle. So it's funny. It's, like, such a different context. But I did this certification. It was called permaculture, which is really about, like, sustainable agriculture. And one of the first principles is the problem is the solution. Like, you can always reorient your thinking about a problem to making it a solution to something in your life, you know? And you just gotta figure it out. Like, it's a shift in perspective around what you're grappling with. And it's not meant to, like, undermine the negative things that are, like, that might be causing in your life, or to dismiss them, but yeah, to turn it into something else. And I think what you're saying too about feeling like, you know, when there's a lot of times, like, a disability or whatever, it's seen as a limitation, but what happens actually when we are forced to sort of, like, hone in on something instead of having everything at our disposal? Sometimes that makes us a lot more excellent at what we're doing.
It makes us stronger, and that's what people mm-hmm. don't see. Like, if you're in a dark room, and in that dark room, all you can do is, like, use your other four senses. Your other four senses are naturally incredibly, like, I think it's like three times as strong as they would be could right. you see. And exactly. that happens instantly. So if we can take the disability of addiction and turn it into the ability to create meaningful artwork like I do it, and you could turn it into anything. I was just using what I became good at because of it. You can do so much for this world.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, it's funny, we're talking about strength-based and the pure leader model, right? But I wanted to make the point that, like, that's not your only strength as somebody in recovery is not helping other people in recovery. It could be doing almost anything in the world and applying those skills, you know, whether that's being the kind of boss who knows at a job, who knows how to empathize with people and look out and care about, you know, mental health wellness days and stuff like that, right? That's a strength that you might have that another boss wouldn't, that you're going to bring to your workplace. Or maybe your strength is that, like, you can really be resilient when things aren't going well, you know, so, and not lose it because you're like, oh, I think this is bad. You should have seen what else I've survived, you know, and keeping your team calm. Like, that could work in any setting. So I think it's important. I wanted to reiterate that the strengths that you can draw on from being somebody who's experienced being in recovery are not just limited to the world of recovery. You know, you can take that Wall Street, absolutely. Take it to wherever.
Phoebes, I firmly believe that all of the bad things that I went through, a lot of the ones that I caused myself during the years after my mom got sick and then died, and then of my addiction, literally gave me an ability that I would not have had I not experienced all those things. And it's not something everybody has. But I do believe that I am very much more emotionally in touch than I would have been otherwise. And I think I use that to write my poetry, to create my art. Right now I'm going to use my emotional in touchness to ask my sister live on the air why she has continued to call my cell phone when I told her three times we're doing a show about recovery. Maybe she has a strength to talk about. Let's see what she's talking about. Hey, Shannon.
I'm not talking.
You're on the air, then you're just sounding silly. I just wanted to know, listen, is there anything that you've encountered throughout your life that was bad to begin with, but you were able to take that and make it stronger? Gain something nobody else had and use it to become a superhero, pretty much.
I don't know.
No, you don't know? All right, well, can you wait now for me to call you back?
I thought I was, don't you want me to pick you up?
I mean, I would love for you to pick me up, but I'm talking to my family right now, Shannon.
Okay.
And now you're a part of it. I'm saving lives. I'm saving lives. You're truly showing everybody how real my radio show is right now. Because this is really happening. I'm live on the air, and everybody hears you.
I can't hear you, though. Are you freaking
out? Oh, no, you're on speaker. I'm just getting ready to hang up, though, because Phoebe's got to present the bigger picture, and Lawrence has a list. When I'm done, you'll hear from me. Love you. Bye. Oh, you didn't have a list this week?
No, I got a couple of things.
Oh, okay.
If you want me to go through them quick. If we have time, if not, we can just go to Phoebe's list.
If Phoebe's is okay going an extra 10 minutes or so, he said he could stay till 3:30. Phoebe's, you got 3:40 in you or no?
Yeah, 3:40 is all right.
So, do you want to?
Sure. So, I just...
I always love your list.
This is Lawrence's short list for today. Dealing with guilty...
Lazy Lawrence's list. He asked me to pick his song for him.
Dealing with guilt and shame, what can we do? So the first thing I have on here is thinking about the things we did to our family or to the community. A lot of us have lied, stolen, you know, deprived people of things they need in order to get what we thought we needed. You know, so just realizing that over time you'll resume trust with people and then you can make it right, like when you feel stable and secure in your recovery, whatever that means for you, is just keep doing the right thing, you know? And that's really what people want from us a lot of the time, you know?
I mean, that's what we want for ourselves, really. We just want to do the right thing. Sometimes we don't know what it is.
Right.
I always know what the right thing is. I'm infallible, just so everybody knows. I never make mistakes, and I always make the right decisions.
Duly noted.
Good. I also lie a little bit. Just do what you will with that. I'm just kidding. What's next?
The next thing is, like, thinking about how we've fallen short on our own ideals. Like, where I should be in life, like, oh, okay, I used drugs for 10 years, and, like, I should be 10 years ahead. I should be this, that, or the other thing. Yeah. I should have a house. I should have a car.
I used to think that. I used to think, like, exactly that. Like, all the kids I went to school with, they're in graduating college right now with, like, master's degrees. I'm getting out of prison, but I'm probably the only one that, like, people who don't live around here know, like, people know who I am. They listen to me. They don't know me, but I mean, people know the movement I'm trying to do. So that to me is equatable to what they did. But before I knew I had these abilities, that is exactly what was going through my head. I love that you put that on the list.
So what we can do about it is accepting that you're at where you're at this moment in time. Like, we'll get to where we want to be or we need to be.
When were you able to do that in your addiction? Like, what, I don't know, if you can't come up with, like, an exact answer, but that's interesting to me. When were you just like, all right, you know what, I messed up, but now I'm ready to get better so I could help people? Can you, like, remember your moment of clarity, or is it just, like, vague now and you just know it happened?
In the beginning, or?
Just in general. When did you know that you were going to commit to recovery so you could help people?
I think after I got my second DWAI, when I was sitting in the police car, like, I had this thought, I'm like, it's over, you know, like, this isn't going to end well, and I'm not beating the system, and I keep getting caught, like, I'm not good at this, so I need to do something different. And even though it took several months and a little bit more pain, you know, to actually, for me to be proactive, you know.
You know what's crazy, like, about drinking and driving stuff? I have shot insane chemicals into my veins. I am terrified to drink a beer and get behind the wheel of a car. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that you should be ashamed of it. I know a lot of people who say it's the greatest time in the world. I'm missing out, I guess, but I'm just scared. Because that's a weapon. You're driving a tank. So, I mean, I'm thankful you never hurt anybody.
Yeah, me too.
And I'm thankful you had that moment of clarity. For me, I was sitting in solitary confinement in prison. It was a year, so 2019, I think, after my father committed suicide. And I had pretty much figured out that my drug use was an attempt to make myself not feel so much, because that's what my superpower is. I am very in tune with my emotions. There are not many people that are. Everybody feels their emotions, but I physically feel them. And I feel emotions that I don't think everybody else does. I think you do too, Lawrence, and even if you don't know it, I think you are on the exact same emotional wavelength as me. When you tell somebody you love them, you really do feel that in your body. When I say I miss someone and I truly am longing for them, I feel like something's tugging on my heart. Mm-hmm. And I'm able to take those feelings and then write beautiful poetry and describe them in ways that make them real for other people. And when I'm making them real for other people, I'm sharing my superpower, because now they know how that feels, and it gives them the illusion that they feel that too. It's, in my mind, maybe we're the next evolutionary step in humankind. I don't think it's a bad, I know it's not a bad thing, but I think
I feel like some people are in tune to it and some people aren't.
Some people,
but the wavelength is
it's
there.
It's hard to deal with. When we were kids, that was hard to deal with for us.
It's like you got to have the right antenna.
Nobody understood us. We didn't know why we felt. We thought we were the same as everyone else because we didn't have any experience, but nobody understood why we were feeling the way we did. Nobody had any answers for us. They're like, just smile. Go hang out with your friends. You're going to be fine. But you're sitting there thinking like, okay, does everybody, when they feel happy, actually legitimately feel like their skin's like jumping? Because I feel it. And it goes a step further. Like, I can walk into a room with somebody I've never known in my life, and I know what they're feeling. I don't just know, I feel what they're feeling. And that's completely tied into that, you know? What about you, Phoebes? Do you have any empathetic abilities?
Ugh. Yeah, it's brutal.
it's also
it can be really hard sometimes. Yeah. Like, just having to pay attention, having to be able to distinguish, like, what is mine, what is somebody else's. Sure. I get hit really hard with other people's
That's
feelings.
That's terrible. I couldn't even imagine that. I'm happy I haven't gone through that.
Yeah, it's, you know, like, anger, for example. Like, I'm like, and it will be physical. Like, if I'm around, you know, kind of a lot of conflict or anger, it'll, like, my stomach will start to turn, my skin will start to crawl. I'll even get to the point where I need to then go, like, punch something, like, get it out of my body.
Not everybody's like that.
You know, that feeling of overwhelming emotion is really intense. And it's interesting, like, I'm somebody who a lot of times will kind of be able to kind of be low-key about my emotions, and that'll hit me really hard. And so that's the thing too. It's, you know, emotions can be really difficult to predict. And I think what I've noticed the hard way is I can pat myself on the back all those times I've been even keeled and didn't lose my cool, kept my voice down, I didn't get affected by it. Give it like 2-3 months. And if I didn't actually deal with the fact that I was upset about something or the fact that I was sad about something directly, it'll come back 5 times as strong. I just learned that the hard way this other day. I went into like a fugue state of rage because I'd gotten in a fight with somebody like 6 days earlier and like didn't really get it off my chest right and was trying to kind of like go along with the flow about it, and then got so overwhelmed with rage when it came back because my body was like, I have not been acknowledged, you know? We've got to acknowledge ourselves and our emotions as valid or they will consume us.
You know,
and
what really helped me to deal with it, actually? When I realized that I was feeling things that other people weren't. Like, I firmly believe I feel emotions that there aren't words for. Because 200 years ago, people like us didn't exist. It's just like any other thing. It's a genetic mess up that gave us this ability. And it helped our ancestors somehow survive. By knowing who to stay away from and when, or who you could be friends with. But when I started realizing that I literally would feel things that I could not explain what they are, no matter how many poems I write, that other people don't struggle with, mm-hmm. I was able to comprehend that there was something different about me, and I can use that to help people understand what I've been through and why they don't have to.
Yeah, I think in old times we would have been
we would have gotten
declared as
stake.
Witches or, you know, people that were heretics.
I would have probably just lied about it. I don't know what this guy Lawrence here is talking about, but I have never felt Sally's emotions. Ever. Not even now. And I'm sorry that you lost your husband, Sally. But that's how it is, man. That's how it is. How do you feel somebody else's emotions? What is the evolutionary benefit to that? All right, Phoebes. I'm going to it's 3:30. I'm going to take this quick recover together break, and then you want to wrap us up with the
I'll bring us home. Yeah.
My favorite part of the every show. All right, this is Taken Back Sunday, Liar. It's Lawrence's pick, and the name of the title is what Lawrence is. All right, guys. We'll be back. Why your boys at best is an arrogant I decided to get a little confident today on today's show. Music saves people. Let it speak to you. We're gonna get better. Intrusive and arrogant. Liar. If we're keeping score, we're all choir boys at best. Intrusive and arrogant. Don't be afraid to express yourself. Who cares if people say you don't sound good? I sing because I love it. And I love it because it helps me be myself. I'm introducing y'all to my good friend Phoebes. And I'm going to let him paint the bigger picture. What's up, Phoebes?
Hey. So, funny story. The topic today is guilt and shame, but when Lip told it to me, I heard grief and shame. So
I'm sure
I've been
that's
on,
what
like,
I said.
Totally different.
But we added it all together.
So what I put together for the bigger picture day was a little bit about grief, but I'm going to stand by it because we're getting into conversations about emotions. And I think the reality is that some of our biggest emotions are often stigmatized and shamed, which is why we turn to private things like substances to deal with them, because we don't have the social supports to do it in a healthy way, right? And I think honestly, we're so culturally sort of like deprived of just sort of rituals of expressing grief or anger. And you know, when I think about the dog, it's always right on cue, like the minute I'm on.
He wants to be the new co-host.
Right? What do you think, Penguin?
That's what his snoring sounds like.
So, you know, there's a few authors who have really, to me, made super compelling arguments about this idea that we sort of have like a multi-generational buildup of grief that is how we've gotten to this point where, you know, looking at the statistics, 17.3 million adults have major depressive disorder. That, you know, it's children, like 2 million children have diagnosed depression, that suicide is one of the leading causes of death in our society. Right. And I think so much of what the medical industry has done is sort of like make us feel like it's your individual brain is sick. That's why you're depressed.
And yeah, then and it's like,
times 17 million, as if there's no connection at all.
But I think maybe depression held an evolutionary advantage at some point, you know? Maybe that's why.
I think our emotions do. I think being emotive and emotional, you know, during the song break, I was researching what you were saying about evolution of empathy, right? And it was like, yeah, I mean, there was an evolutionary imperative for that because the parents of offspring who were more empathetic, like more invested in and concerned about what their offspring were going through and responding to that, like those children live longer on average. So they outcompeted. And so the empathy gene carries on more so than the non-empathy gene. So that's and there's proven, you know, kind of empathy genes in primates, like even pre-humans. It's not just us.
What?
Sitting up to, yeah, that came before humans.
So, that's crazy.
I mean, my emotional service animal sitting here, like he's very empathetic. Like he will start getting
I've gotten into full-fledged arguments upset. That people tell me animals don't feel emotions.
Not true.
Get out of
I
my.
Mean,
that's a
you
walk
have
away
to have not
me.
Spent it. Even how angry the You're squirrels in my yard get, like they're very emotional.
I had a chipmunk run up to me, and I was blocking his way up the tree or something, and he told me about myself.
Yeah, no, they'll tell you. They get mad. So no, anybody who doesn't, you know, and this is what's so sad to me, right? We're so disconnected from our truth. I think that we and all animals are emotional. We feel emotions, and it's important because it's giving us information about what to do or not to do. But anyway,
a dog that used to roll her eyes at me.
You know, I think these two authors who I'm thinking of both really feel like the reason we have such widespread mental health issues and addiction issues is because we have a bunch of societal grief that has yet to express itself.
I was reading something similar. They said that a lot of it was a reaction to living in cities because we wouldn't cope with that if we were in the wild.
Right.
So that's
right.
What they're saying. Isn't that a crazy concept?
Yeah, it is and it isn't, right? It's like it's crazy until you stop to think about it. Like what would happen if you took any other animal out of the wilderness and stuck them in boxes stacked on top of each other in a concrete jungle, right? Like they probably have some response to that, you know, but we get used to things. But I'm thinking even about, you know, the when humans are constantly put in a really challenging position to just survive, it's really hard to be able to sort of like make the space and time to kind of process emotions, because survival oftentimes is this feeling of just, you got to just keep going. You got to numb it. You got to keep moving. You got to survive.
And I think in today's context, it's like,
I'm sorry.
You gotta keep, it's like, you got to keep your job. You got to keep your housing. You got to stay on top. I don't have time.
And make everybody else off happy
for
too.
For grieving like somebody who died, right?
We put so much energy now, Phoebes, into being what other people think is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Added on to what you were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I'm sorry, I won't interrupt again, but I just felt like that was like the same sort of thing, you know?
No, it absolutely is. It's right on point. I love your add-ons. Like,
I love your segment. So,
I think now the new kind of social driver of mental health is climate change. Actually, that there is like more and more research going on about like literally diagnosing people with climate anxiety or climate depression, right?
That's
like,
not...
what does it mean? Basically, people who are really paying attention to what's going on with climate change
are more stressed out about it, or grieving.
I mean, the projected sort of we're projected. All right, here's an example.
They're like
trees are one of my favorite things in the world. I love trees. Okay. Trees are nostalgic for me. I just heard on the news the other day that because of invasive species and climate change, like temperature changes, because of all the shipping industry, that it's expected that a third of the trees we're familiar with in North America will be extinct in the next 10 years. That makes me very depressed. It makes me depressed to think about not seeing the types of trees that I grew up with. And a lot of people just blow that off and not care. But for a lot of other people, it's very impactful. When I see what's happening with the refugees, like the Haitians who are getting kicked out of this country, even though they just walked hundreds of miles to escape what is climate catastrophe in their own country.
Phoebes, hold on.
That makes me feel depressed, right? And so okay. I think we gotta deal with the fact that we live in a really kind of hard world. And validate the emotional experience attached to that. Because if we don't validate the emotional responses, then that's where the shame or the ignoring or the numbing becomes the default response.
Or the self-blaming. So what I just turned mine and Lawrence's mic down while you were talking, and I was like, so pretty much what you're saying is like there's a few people that are taking climate change personally. They're like, what did we do to our freaking planet? And it's causing them stress. It's causing them to be depressed because, like, now our children, their children have to live in this world, and we literally did this.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying that they're saying there might be a link between that mental health and addiction?
Yeah.
That is groundbreaking and absolutely credible. I love this conversation. Phoebes, we got to cut it off, but I mean...
We do, but we're back next week, hopefully, next time we're on.
I'd like to continue this bigger picture if you want to add more to it.
Definitely. Let's build on that.
Let's try that. We've never done that before.
Cool.
All right, I wanted to
The bigger
say,
picture gets bigger.
Oh, my gosh.
The biggest
picture. The huger.
The hugest picture.
The biggest picture. We got to have the big show introduce it.
Hilarious.
From wrestling. This is the big show. All right, everybody, whoever's depressed, I know that is terrible, and I'm sorry you feel that way. It gets better if you look for ways to improve it. Medication's the only thing that got me out of it, but once I got out of it, I was able to see the error of my ways. I was able to see that's why I wanted to get high all the time. So if you're depressed, I want to let you know I do care about you. I don't even have to know who you are, and you matter to me. If you ever feel like there's no other way but to end everything, I want to tell you you're wrong, because there's always another way. That's actually a terrible solution, because that is the only permanent solution to a very temporary feeling. Emotions change. Suicide doesn't. What you do to your family, what you leave behind, think about that before you actually commit to it, because it is so hard. I know sometimes stuff is so bad that you just don't want to feel it anymore. You don't want to talk about it, and getting high isn't fixing it anymore. But do you really want to make the people you leave behind feel that way? Do you want to leave them with questions? Do you want... I know you don't, and I know you just don't want to feel like that anymore. Just try to talk to somebody. Reach out to me. Whatever you can do, please just try. I want to live in a world where nobody ever commits suicide again. I want to live in a world where people aren't sad anymore and feel like they have to get high to be good enough. I want to live in a world where we can recover together. I love you guys. We'll be back next week.
Peace.